Hello, Internet. Welcome to episode 117 of the Making Geeks podcast. We are the podcast for makers, dads, and geeks. And we have another great show here for you today. Let me go ahead and introduce all of our co-hosts, starting with Mr. Josh Price, Mr. Mark O'Keefe, and Mr. Wes Swain.
Hey.
What's up, guys? How are you doing this week?
Hey, buddy.
Not bad. Missed you guys.
Welcome back.
Yep, welcome back. So, what you guys have been up to? I'm sorry, Mark. Go ahead. Go ahead.
I listened to last week's today.
What did you think?
I was I'm disappointed I didn't get to see to hang out with Donovan. But yeah, that was a good episode.
Yeah, it was kind of fun.
And when you were talking about when you guys were talking about like what do you think of when you think of the beardless man, and Sean, you said, you know, we're in the group, so yeah, I kind of thought exactly you're a maker that doesn't have a beard. I was like, yeah, that's exactly what came across my mind when we first found out about him.
Yeah, it made sense to all of us except for anybody that is not within that circle.
It's funny, a bunch of beardos.
Yeah, that Shave of the Month Club never actually crossed my mind, but then when you brought it up, I'm like, okay, I see where that could be problematic. So you guys up to anything interesting this week? Wes, how about you?
Working on version am I on now? 3 of the Mega Man helmet for Grant. The first one was too big. The second one is too small. And the third one hopefully is just right. Yes. I'm getting better, but it's like progress. It's like practice, though. It's like forced progress through practicing a lot and redoing the same thing over and over again. The seams are better. I'm getting better at cutting the pieces out. The first time I used a rusty old box cutter, that was a struggle to cut the foam. Then I took it over to my buddy's shop and used a bandsaw, which was better. But the edges, I think he had a nick in his bandsaw blade, so they were kind of like scraggly. Not as bad as the first time. But then the third iteration, I actually went and bought a new knife from a big box store, and that thing is nice, man. It's just, it's almost like not enough resistance now, and I'm like, whoa, that's too much. Whoa! Because I got so used to doing that, and they're super clean.
Can't you cut that stuff with like a hot knife too, or a hot blade? Or a wire, hot wire or something?
Then I just have to buy something else. Maybe. I don't know. But I was doing that. I got pretty good at the seams. I'm holding up the most recent version to the people watching at home. So the seams aren't great. I don't know how much of a gap there's supposed to be, if anything. But it's all fillable. But the pieces are symmetrical. I didn't really have to trim very much, which I was pretty happy with.
It looks pretty good.
What are you going to fill it with?
Where's the battery go?
Flex seal? I think, or quick seal? Quick flex?
Flex seal?
Yes, it's a DAP product that Bill Duran had linked.
Caulk?
It's basically caulk. I'll try that, see if
that's
it works.
What she said.
Unfortunately. So I'm bringing some of it traveling with me on the trip coming up to somewhere.
Maybe one of my kids has a tinier head than Grant. They could take your baby bear helmet.
It'll fit Elizabeth. I don't know.
Elizabeth, that'll be her warrior helmet for when she takes over the world.
You're like a little Mohawk. Yeah, it's fun. I did a couple. I think I did an Instagram live while I was putting it together. That was kind of neat. I made like a little stand out of Legos to hold my phone at like the good orientation as it was recording me. This one. How about you guys? What have you been up to, Josh?
I've also been making props, but I can't talk about yet the props that I made. We're building R2-D2, which is cool. What else? I looked around the shop the other day, and it looked like a prop shop. We had a bunch of stuff going on. There's like Star Wars armor, the thing I can't talk about, an R2-D2. What else? Oh, a bunch of Mandalorians, because Bob's kids all want to be Mandalorians for Halloween, so there's like random pieces of Mandalorian armor and like chunks of helmets laying all around.
I saw some of those posts from them. It was cool.
Yeah, it's pretty neat.
It's fun seeing all the kids in the shop.
Yeah. But the thing that I can't talk about is dope, and I'm super excited about it. And I did a lot of work on it, so I'm pretty proud of it. But we're skipping this week, so there's supposed to be a video out today because today's Thursday, but it's not out today. We were late, so it'll be out next week. So I can't talk about it now. I have to talk about it then. But it's cool. But yeah, we were making props and stuff too. It's super fun. Cool. Sean, what are you doing, man? How's school?
School's going pretty good, but I am also making a prop. I am making a wearable arc reactor prop for Halloween. And what's interesting, and I think I was talking to Wes about this before, is that a lot of people have already made these in the past, so there's a lot of resources out there on how to make them. And I was a little bit kind of like put off by the idea because I didn't want to just go off and, you know, straight out copy somebody else. So I'm doing kind of like a combination of what some other people have done. But because mine's going to be wearable, there's also a couple other problems I had to solve. So luckily enough, there's enough differences that I'm able to kind of make it my own a little bit. And I'm about halfway done with the build. And I'll probably have it all finished up tomorrow. So I've been kind of posting some incremental improvements with each step of the build on Instagram, so if anybody wants to see those. And then the other thing I'm working on that's been ongoing for the last couple of weeks is a two-part mold for a pop head for Boba Fett. And I finally cast the cement, and I got half of... It's a two-part mold, so I got one part off, and the other part, it's stuck. Mm-hmm. The cement is stuck in the plaster Paris, and I don't think I'm going to be able to take it out. Although earlier, Wes was giving me the idea of putting the plaster Paris like in a bucket of water.
And hopefully and dissolve it.
It'll swell enough that I could probably peel it off. I don't think it'll completely dissolve, but I should be able to peel it off and kind of, you know, have the cement casting left over, which is all I really care about. I can make another mold. But I want to do something different, and I have experience doing plaster Paris molds, and it's a cheaper price point than silicone. So I thought it'd be something kind of cool to show as a different option for doing these things. So having fun with all of that. And then school and animation and still really kind of geeking out and kind of falling in love again with art and animation, which is something I never thought was going to happen. So that's been pretty cool. How about you, Mark?
Just getting used to work again.
How's it going?
It's definitely a different culture in this company, which is weird, but it's also a lot easier for the most part. But it's funny, too, because I was driving around and I was leaving to do my route this morning, and I'm driving up and I see a whole bunch of stormtroopers in someone's front yard. I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. And then I get in front of it and it's a full size AT-ST sitting in this guy's front yard. I was like, oh, I got to get a picture of it for you guys. But, oh, dude, it was so awesome.
Did you become his best friend?
No, he wasn't. I was just driving past. It's by my office, but other than that, I've just been trying to figure out the 3D scanning table that I'm redesigning. Just trying to get something that I can mount the motor in and stuff. So other than that, though, it's just work and home and family and
right on.
Trying to get the caffeine fuel so I can go into the night and not mess stuff up.
You gonna be down in the shop tonight?
Not tonight, but after work. I'm trying to get it to the point where I can, you know, put Thea to bed and then go down into the shop and work on stuff. Because my biggest problem has always been like the later into the night, the stupider mistakes that I make.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just watch out for that router.
Well, yeah, no, I'm trying to, you know, no blood. But it's also wasting materials. Because I'm Poe, I can't afford more materials. I got a bigger rate the first time.
See, you held your hands up like it would be like an occupational hazard for you to do something like that, like that dumb at night, like it would be bad. I feel the exact same way. Like, my kids have been begging me to jump on a trampoline. And a trampoline is one of those things in my head as an adult. I'm like, you know what? That's a risk that I'm not willing to take because
yeah,
it's benign enough. and I'm going to hurt myself on a stupid trampoline, and then I'm not going to be able to do stuff.
That's
and I don't really want to be on a trampoline in the first place, so it's not even really worth the risk.
Yeah.
That's one huge thing that kind of sucks about getting older, is, you know, those kind of considerations.
I mean, I can do it. I don't want to. And I'm like, you know what? No. This is the first time I've been able to do some weird composite risk management about playing with my kids. I'm like, you guys want to go, like, let's go hang out on the roof or go jump on airplanes. Like, that sounds fun. But the trampoline, apparently I draw a line at the trampoline at unnecessary risks.
See, so. The trampoline, I'd be okay enough to, like, walk on, hop, hop, butt, hop, butt, hop, and that's about it. But that's how I shattered my leg, man.
And they want to jump on me. And I'm like, yeah, I don't want to. You guys go play. Have fun with it.
See, I have to be even careful wrestling with my son now, because Mark's, what, 85 pounds, I think? Mm. So, you know, I could still take him down. That's not the issue. But, you know, a small little twist or picking him up the wrong way, and my back's out. Yep. And he's getting stronger too, so yeah, I gotta watch out for that.
So I just looked something up real quick for you, Sean, regarding the plaster.
Yeah,
and a lot of places are suggesting use white vinegar, pour the white vinegar directly on the plaster, then wrap the whole thing in plastic wrap to keep the vinegar from drying.
Uh-huh.
And check it every couple hours, and if it dries, re-soak with white vinegar, repeat, and basically it's acidic enough it'll break down the plaster.
Oh, interesting. I'll have to try that. Thanks.
And then you scrub white vinegar into the concrete surface with a soft bristle scrubbing brush to ensure you've removed all the plaster particles in the concrete's textured surface.
Hey, look at
then
that.
Rinse with water. Bam.
Pro tip. Thanks.
Good job.
And we solved. What, we had a problem and solved it. Do? I know. Yeah, right?
So versatile.
If this is a radio show, we'd be doing call-ins for stuff like that right now.
Oh, we should have it.
Let's solve your problem.
We need a 1-800 number, don't we? People can call in.
Right. Mm. Can we get that through weeks. Skype so they can just call straight into the...
Maybe. That'd be kind of funny.
That would make for a very interesting show.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, caller. You're on there.
We'd know we made it when we got Baba Booey'd.
Speaking of listeners, I want to give a quick shout-out to somebody that kind of wrote... somebody wrote into the show. Clint from C3D Prop Shop. Said he's been binge watching all the episodes all the way like through episode 83.
Oh, yeah, he just followed all of us.
Yeah, and just give him a quick shout out. Thanks for listening, and yeah, hope things are going good.
So, what are we talking about today?
This week, I thought it'd be kind of cool to talk about 3D printers. I know that we've talked about them a lot before in different capacities, but I thought that with all the different technologies coming out or the different price points, all the different machines, that just having kind of like a general conversation regarding them and just me picking you guys' brains on different aspects too, since now I finally have access to one. I kind of have access to one. I think it might be, or thought it'd be interesting, at least somewhat informative, especially for anybody that's thinking about hopping into that realm of 3D printers or anybody else that might be kind of like a newbie. I know there was a couple of people in one of the posts, specifically Rebecca DeGroote, that was asking questions about 3D printers because she got a MakerBot from her school and was trying to figure out what to do with it and how to start out. And you guys are a lot more seasoned than I am, so I'm willing to listen and learn for whatever you guys have to say.
First thing is don't judge 3D printing by a MakerBot.
Oh, I know better than that already, but yeah.
Like, imagine if the only car you ever saw or had experience with was the car from Driver's Ed.
Damn.
And then you got out in the world and you discover,
they
like,
don't all oh, suck.
Man, that car is awesome. That car actually goes fast, or that car doesn't click weird, or whatever. So the MakerBot is the Driver's Ed, like, public school of 3D printers. Like, they're novel. They may work. They're not going to work that great.
See, I think a better way to compare the MakerBot is, you know, a car that has a really nice coat of paint, but a crappy engine.
Oh.
Language. That's kind of the way it feels.
Cap is going to come back and yell at you for that.
Come back from what?
Oh.
He didn't get snapped?
Well, yeah, but done. He just did the Instagram post.
Not yet.
Spoiler alert.
Yep.
But
I thought it was happening at the end of that movie.
Yep. So, Sean, did you see the bits video we did about buying your?
I absolutely did.
How was that? Because I wrote it, and so I don't know, and I don't know how it was received by anybody other than
I thought it was great. My only frustration was that I wanted the money to go out and buy one of my own, and I couldn't. So.
Oh well, yeah.
No, but I thought everything on it was great, and I know that a video like that has to be a challenge anyways because you're doing a short format video for something that is a lot longer topic. But I think it was a really good primer for as a start. I think it was good.
Well, we went into that going like, you're not going to get an answer because people always want the answer. Like, which printer should I buy? Tell me the one to go get. And I was like, you can't really do that. And so when someone's looking into 3D printing, I don't know. I mean, you guys kind of back me up. Like, if you want to, like, you have to figure out what it is you want to be printing.
And yeah. Mark,
you talked about getting the CR10 because it was on sale and it looked really appealing. And like, what was your appeal for the CR10 in particular?
The size.
Because it's a lower price point with a massive build volume.
Yes. Yes. I want to make some helmets, and I don't want to have to bring everything into a software, cut it all up, groove it, so when I can print it all in pieces and then fit it all back together and glue it. I just want to print it in one piece. So, like with the printer I have right now, the FDM, if I wanted to make a helmet, I would have to cut it in at least, for my head, I would have to cut it in at least 16 pieces. Mm. You know? And that's just so much more work than I want to do. So the CR10 was, and I also listened to, usually if I have a question about a printer, the first thing I do is go look up 3D Printing Nerd and see if he did a review on it. And his review was pretty, pretty stellar for that printer. You know, for being what it was, you know, it's not that it was the greatest printer on the market, but for it's the greatest printer for the price point, you know?
Yeah.
And going from there, like if you're looking at, if you want high detail, you know, you're either going to have to tweak an FDM or you can get an SLA, but that's also a ton of money and the size. Too.
Yeah, like, an SLA printer, you're gonna have to cut the thing up big time.
Yeah, like what I was doing with the Lego bits, I don't know if I could do with an FDM printer, and I'm sure there are people out there who could get that detail with an FDM, but it's a lot easier to do with the SLA.
For those listening at home, I'm sure there's somebody. Explain the difference between FDM and SLA.
FDM is forward deposition.
Fused deposition
modeling. And SLA is manufacturing. Yeah, SLA. I see. It's
stereolithography.
Well, that's apparatus. The name. That's the file, but it's also solid laser sintering.
No, that's SLS.
No, yeah, SLA, no. So,
it's stereolithography apparatus. I had to do the thing.
See?
I researched the crap out of this. That whole biz video I wrote, so I paid attention to all that stuff, but they're using light where the SLS, the sintering, is using lasers.
In the show notes for anybody listening, I will have links to, you know, like all these definitions in the show notes.
But I think if you're looking for a 3D printer though, most 90% of people are going to be going for the plastic one. And the best advice I can give is get a kit you have to put together because you will be taking it apart.
I don't agree with that.
I don't agree.
Oh, if you want to do an upgrade to it, if something starts going wrong, you have a better understanding of where it might be going wrong. So it's a lot easier to troubleshoot. It's a lot easier to figure out why there's this weird thing in some of my prints. And it also just gives you a better understanding of what you're doing and how you're doing it.
I think for makers, that's probably good advice. But I think for the general public, I don't think the general public wants to tinker with the machine that way.
They want to press print.
But that distinction is price point. Because you want to get a machine that works right out of the box and works consistently, that you don't have to do a lot to, because the lower price you pay, the more work you're going to have to do to it. You're either going to have to upgrade it, or maintain it or fix it or calibrate it yourself. And then the more you pay, the more it's already done. The quality is a lot higher, that it just works. And so like an Ultimaker, we have the Ultimaker 2 Plus and the Ultimaker 3. And they just work. But they're pretty expensive. Like the Lulzbot just works. It's a little more expensive. The Prusa just works. It's a little less expensive. So it's starting to level out. But I mean, the Prusa comes in a kit. If you really want it to be a little bit cheaper, you can get it in a kit if you want. But you're going to have to fiddle with it. And if you're that type of person that wants to fiddle with it, you're going to do a lot of work before you get an actual thing that you bought the machine to do, right? So, like, if you want to see the results of your money, getting a kit is kind of a pain.
So, I've only messed around with a 3D printer for, a month and a half now? Not really that long. And all I've done is really downloaded files from Thingiverse and printed them. Some of them worked, some of them haven't. I've had errors with some. And through this process and I'm printing, I'm thinking, 3D printing is insane. Because there's some things where I'm printing and I'm thinking, I could just take a block of wood to the bandsaw and cut this out. I can make this in a fraction of the time. So my brain is going, okay, why am I doing this? And I know part of the thing is I don't think I've gotten to the real useful part of 3D printing yet. And I'm not even sure. I mean, I know that there's some applications where I know it'd be really useful, but what is the real purpose? Why 3D print?
Cosplay.
Wes, go for that one.
Oh. Well, in my own experience, I had a whole suite of training that I had picked up along the way through various 3D modeling softwares. And so that whole tool set of mine was going unused in my shop. It's like I knew how to 3D model. I knew how to make all these 3D objects, but I had no tangible outlet for them at the time. And so that was sort of, at least in the shop and building props and other, you know, things, dabbling, making my Mario Kart thing. I didn't have a 3D printer at all. And so I did everything by hand. So it's sort of like a wasted bit of experience, basically. It was unutilized. And so the 3D printing, that was the first time I had taken advantage of all that training in a tangible form. And that was super giddy about it. Like, at first I was sort of indifferent to 3D printing, didn't really care so much. And then I didn't really give it enough credit or enough like actual thought of how I could use it in the shop and use it in a practical way. And I'm still discovering how I can use it in a practical way. It's definitely, it lends itself more to gadgets and gizmos at first. And you kind of have to like gear your mind into thinking like, oh, why am I doing this thing that I've done the same way for 20 years? Why have I went and bought this object that I've bought several times over because they always break or whatever? And like, well, oh, I can actually make that. Like, just the whole concept of, oh, I can actually make this. These random little things that normally would be a component of something else, and that larger object would cost, you know, it's not the actual broken piece. So it's weird. I don't know. I would say I was able to utilize a skill set that I had not been able to tap into before. And that was pretty eye-opening for me.
It's the same conversation you could have about a CNC. Like, you could cut something with a jigsaw or a bandsaw, like 3D, you know, relief carving. Like, you can do it with chisels and tools if you really wanted to. It's your time and precision, and then really which one is more efficient. Because, yeah, if you can do something really fast on a piece of wood or carve it out of or cut it out of a piece of plastic sheeting, then 3D printing that is just novelty at that point.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like any robot. It's designed to help you and to do something that you couldn't do somewhere else, or to do it cleaner or more precise or more intricate than you may be able to do manually.
So let me give you like a quick scenario of something. The scenario is trying to sell my wife on buying a 3D printer. So she's doing vendor events almost every other week where we're making our wooden signs and selling different things at these different vendor events. And she'll go, oh, could you 3D print this thing? I'm like, yes, I could. But 3D printing that thing is going to take an hour. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, no, that's too long or something along those lines. The rate of production seems to be too slow for some people, especially when you're making more than one. Prototyping and doing all those things I know it makes complete sense for. But when you have to start printing quantities of things, do you still...
Yeah. That's where you're going to lose your time. Like, it earns its money in the prototype phase when you make a master and you finish the outside of that master where it's nice and smooth and you can't see any of the striation lines. And then you mold that and you make, you know, resin copies or whatever it is you want. You make copies of that thing. So you make your master, make your nice and clean, pretty one, and then use that in silicone or in plaster or whatever that you're already doing to make hundreds of them. But yeah, because printing a whole mass of things, it takes forever. And if you have that time just to like batch out, like we're printing chess pieces. So we printed, I think, 3 chess boards worth of chess pieces because we don't need the chess pieces right now. And we can put all the pawns on one plate and just set it and forget it and off it goes. And then later on, I've got, you know, 8 pawns. But if you're trying to mass produce a bunch of stuff, like printing is super slow. You have a lot of random issues where some might fail. And then if one of those things fails, then the whole batch is pretty much failed on that plate. There's some technology now where you can highlight and kind of cancel an individual piece on a build plate. So it doesn't do that, but I mean, that's almost brand new. But yeah, the batch and big orders, I wouldn't think of doing those on a 3D printer.
So here's a question that has stuck with me for a long time. And I've referenced this documentary a lot of times on the podcast or a documentary on Netflix called Print the Legend. And one of the people interviewed was talking about what is 3D printers' killer app? What is the most useful thing that these printers can or should be able to do that would get everybody to want to buy one? Is there some utilitarian purpose or function that these printers can serve that should make them more ubiquitous in all households?
See, that's hard because the general public as a whole, I kind of feel, is moving away from the DIY bit. We're kind of fighting to bring that back and let people know that, yeah, you can still do all this, but it feels like as a whole, the general public wants nothing to do with repairing or fixing or modifying. They just want their thing.
But even if DIY wasn't a part of it, what if the machine was so good it's basically a replicator in Star Trek where you hit the button and it makes the thing? What would be that thing in a normal household that everybody
Amazon
would need?
Amazon in your living room.
Not a material that is not printable at this moment, but like kind of like what you're saying, what would be the killer thing in a household that it would make? Would it be just making doorstops? Like, everybody needs doorstops. This is a doorstop machine or coasters.
There's only so many, like, knobs and other things that you need to replace at any given time, I think, right?
Yeah.
I remember when 3D printing, or when the idea of everybody having their own printer is that you were going to be able to just print replacement parts for appliances. And that Whirlpool or whatever would have, like, a database of their repair parts, and you could just, like, print their repair parts. I think if other than Thingiverse and people on Thingiverse fixing their refrigerators and then putting that model on there and then you hoping to have the same problem, I think if that were a thing, like if companies could monetize that in some fashion reasonably, and you had a small little thing like in the garage, like you bought, you know, any one of your appliances and inside that packet of crappy papers, you go, oh, here's the website for all the repair pieces. If you lose one or break one, you just load it in or select it and it starts to print it and boom, you've got a new piece. But I think it goes back to what you guys are talking about. It demands a certain type of person to want to do that. I mean, you can print little Pokemon and tchotchkes and stuff all day long, and those are novel and fun. I mean, I like printing functional things on mine that solve problems. But I have a problem solver, you know, nature. So I think that's the thing. If it doesn't cook your food, then that doesn't appeal to everybody. Like
maybe it just stocks your armory. Maybe that's what it'll do.
Do you think part of it can be fixed or improved simply by the sheer number of different materials now that you could print? So, I mean, being able to print like in rubber could be pretty interesting.
Well, printing in different materials it's a pain.
Yeah.
Like, so there's a lot of improvements in settings. Like a lot of printers and a lot of slicing softwares have gotten like flexible materials or nylon material or PETGs and things that are not PLA. Like the settings are pretty good. But you have to store it in a certain way. You have to be able to use it when it's super dry. So there's a lot of considerations that the layperson just doesn't want to do or doesn't have time for. And they just want it to work. And a lot of the more advanced or a lot of atypical filaments, they don't work that way. Like you have to baby them and you have to give them special consideration. And a lot of people aren't going to buy into that right away. So if the machines can control that environment to a point where you take off a spool, you put on a spool of random, whatever it is, and the machine or the slicing software just knows how to print it consistently, then I think that's great. But there's no one magic bullet. Like certain filaments like to stick to a certain type of like Gerolite or to blue tape or to glue or to glass or to PI or whatever. And you have to do work to print on those things. And a lot of people just don't want to do the work. That's like the SLA printer, Mark, that you have. Like that seems like way too much work for me. I know that there's a print that I have in my head right now that I go, that is perfect for an SLA printer. I don't have one. But I would never think of printing something in an SLA as my first go-to because it seems like a lot of work. And so I seem to fit that demographic of whiny people that I just talked about, even though it could be the best solution.
Speaking of SLA printers, I don't know if you guys saw it or have seen it before, but Tested just did a review on a small form. I think it's not SLA. I think it might be SLS. Or it's
they don't know.
No, it's a Spark Fund. It seems like an offshoot of SLA. So usually the SLA is the laser that cures the resin and then pulls up. Well, mm-hmm. This one flashes the light all at once.
No, yeah, that's the that's how a lot of people are getting the prices down. What they'll do is they'll do right. A giant LED screen on the bottom, and instead of the laser going over the whole layer,
right. DLP,
kind of DLP, the same thing.
It's a form of it.
It'll just do the entire layer at the same time. So instead of having a point whatever second cure time, each layer takes 6 seconds because that's how much time it takes for that to cure with the light source they're using.
It seems interesting.
I like the idea. Yeah, they just gotta if they could get it to cure faster.
But the one you saw untested, the SL1 from Prusa. Is the same one but bigger, so it has
same that technology. Same, okay,
yeah, the LED. That same. Actually, I'm not sure about that. But I know that the build plate that they held up on there, it's got that. It's not the flat build plate that the Form Labs has, Mark, that you have. It's kind of like a, I don't know, like a plastic bottom, like you can see through it.
Yeah, this one was the same thing.
Yeah, the SL1 from Prusa had the same thing.
What I thought was really interesting is, I mean, the printer itself, of course, but the way that the thing is sliced for it, it created like 6,000 PNG files that is just a black and white image of what gets flashed. And I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, because it has an LCD screen underneath, and the LCD is there just to block out those certain pieces.
Right.
So the light source is
it's a mask.
Adequately shadowed. Yeah.
It's worth checking out as a video. I thought it was pretty interesting, especially for a $250 price point, if you're looking at
it. Yeah, because it's still in crowdfunding right now. Because I think it said it was supposed to retail at $400 and some change, but right now they've extended the crowdfunding on Indiegogo, and it's at $200 and something dollars.
Staying at $250 as far as I know.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
But it has no screen. Like, you have to do everything in an app.
An app, and it only reads it off the SD card. It's a Bluetooth enabled for your phone. Yeah, there's very limited functionality for that price. But
that's weird. So, do you guys?
Good.
I was gonna say for software wise, for controlling all these things, do you guys like the idea of, like, let's say, I know Simplify 3D is a huge one, but it's, I think, $100, $130,
yeah, $150-ish, yeah.
What do you guys think about?
I use Simplify 3D.
I use Cura. Cura's free. Only thing I don't like about Cura is its supports. I know the supports on Simplify 3D, like,
that's the reason
they
I got
come off so perfectly, yeah, and don't leave any artifacts. Like, I talked to the guys at Matter Hackers, and they tried to help me get settings, you know, the Z distance, but still supports on Cura.
Can you define exactly where you want the supports? Like, you want supports under this elbow? It's like a general, like, apply
you can do
everything,
right?
Yeah.
Like, everywhere?
Yeah.
Everywhere over a certain overhang angle or just touching the build plate.
Right.
So you can't delete supports in certain places. You can't modify the support structure. You can modify the geometry. Like, you can change the support geometry, but you don't have as much freedom with placement.
That's why I got it, to be able to do that. It's very
and
nice.
There's kind of a pain to get off. Like, even with the optimal height, which I figured out I had, it's still a little chewed up. Especially when you're trying to do helmets like you're talking about. Like, you want that nice, smooth surface. I want to be able to not have to do a whole bunch of post-processing work. But where the support usually touches, like, it's gnarly. Like a cheese grater.
I was, I upgraded because I was using, what's the default one a while back? I can't remember his name. Anyway, I used the Matter Hackers one. Solid. Can't remember the name of that one either, but I know it was for Matter Hackers.
Matter Control,
yes. Mm-hmm. And the without doing anything except changing the software, the difference in the print I got was astounding. Like, a simple software can make your print that much better. And that one is free, so I'd have to play with that more. I got to get my other printer back up on its feet.
Sean, you've probably used what... it's MakerBot Print, right? Is that the name of the software that they have?
Yeah, it's just MakerBot
Print. It's a proprietary software. That was the first one I ever used.
I can't stand it because I feel like I can't do anything in the damn software.
You can't. It's
it won't even let me scale a print.
Oh, that you should be able to do.
It's blocked off for some reason. I can't adjust it. I don't know why, but yeah, I've not liked anything about it.
Again, it's your hand is the keys to the driver's ed car.
It definitely feels that way.
That was the first slicing software I used, because the first printer I ever had was a Wanhao Duplicator S4, which sucked. But I didn't know what I was doing. So I was printing things off Thingiverse, and I thought it was exactly the same. Like, I'm just going to take this model from the internet. I'm going to put it into this Mickey Mouse looking stuff that has a 3D model of my print bed, and then I'm going to hit print. And then the magic should just happen. And then when it failed, I never really understood why, because that software didn't allow me to adjust things on my own. So I was like, well, 3D printing is to blame, not the individual setting for that model or that filament or the environment or whatever. So it kind of keeps you at this novice level, which sucks.
Mm-hmm. So to kind of finish up the conversation a little bit for tonight, predictions for the future. You know, how are things going to improve? How are things going to change? Do you think they're going to change in any kind of significant way? Or is this basically just what we have for now and the foreseeable future?
I think metal is going to be coming to the home user. Like, solid, not like metal infused PLA. Because Formlabs already has that their metal.
And it's, their SLS printer?
Yeah, the SLS. I mean, it's $10,000, but that's still... If you really needed something like that, if you really needed parts made out of metal, that is something you could theoretically save for.
That's the metal powder, right? The powder they
use. Yes, it's an aluminum powder, and the laser sinters it together. And from the review that I saw when they were walking through it, they said these parts are not prototype. They are ready to go. The only reason they're prototype is because you're 3D printing them, and it takes a little while to actually make them. But the strength is there, the utility is there. So like the example they used was the dude wanted his own bike pedals, and he printed them, put them on his bike, and went off. You know.
But then you've also got Nylon X that Matter Hackers has, and they print bike pedals. I mean, that was their big thing, too. That you can print a functional part. And granted, it's still out of plastic, but it's out of like nylon, which is one of the stronger plastics, and then it's carbon fiber reinforced, which helps reduce brittleness and stuff. And
yeah,
so I think it's like you're saying. I think it's materials.
It's strength and size.
Yeah, but I think the key is making those materials easier to use, because the materials are great, but you need hardened nozzles, you need special settings, you need special heat. Like, you need to consider a lot of things, which is great. If you're going to be doing it, you should learn it. But if you want the general public to adapt to these newer, cooler, fancier, more, you know, robust materials, you have to make the hardware usable and more reliable.
It has to be something you don't need to upgrade.
Well, because I'm trying to print an ABS print, like on purpose. The only reason I'm printing an ABS is because I have to print this thing to show ABS. It has failed 12 times in a row.
The bottom warping?
The bottom warps. Layer lines don't stick. And it's stuff that, like, that's what ABS does. And it's just one of those things. Like, yep. And so that's why people invent new materials to try to get the durability without all the pains in the anus that the other stuff has.
That's why with my printer, I was trying to make the enclosure so I could keep the heat in.
We have ours in an enclosure. We've got an enclosure. I tried blue tape. I tried magic goo. I tried glue stick. I tried turning the fan off for half of the print so that it doesn't start to cool. Yeah. Like, there's so many little nuances that you have to baby. And number 12 seems to be working. But the materials that they made to replace those, which are great, like PETGs, but even PETG, like, you have to print at a hotter temperature. It strings, and there's little things about it that you have to learn rather than just putting on a spool of the good stuff or the strong stuff or the better stuff and it just kind of working.
I think also some of the newer materials, like you had the ceramic 3D printer too, printing the vases.
Yes, that was cool.
I think it'll start like blending or blurring the lines for like typical 3D printing materials, and it'll kind of go into other realms that didn't have that as an option anymore. Like, you know, that's obviously like pottery making, and then you've got the ones like in a larger scale, like printing houses, the USC. I think that'll start really.
$100,000 for that printer.
That's
probably the killer app right there is making the usable objects straight off the printer. And so I think ceramics would probably print faster than a lot of other things too, if it's already in its moldable form. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's a game changer right there. Be able to print like housing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's huge. And
that's why, because I looked into that printer, because I was like, all right, when I didn't have a job, I was like, all right, what would it cost to make my own company 3D printing houses? I could do that. The company had a Taiwan or somewhere over there, but yeah, about $100,000. That one's yours.
You'd be better off almost building your own custom rig, running off an Arduino.
Yeah, right. But it's still moving, you know, the concrete into the nozzle.
Anything else with 3D printing this week? Or?
Well, I've got one thing I've been working on recently. I'm in a geek dad group on Facebook, and I had a guy who wanted a dice tower for D&D.
Saw that. Yeah, that thing was cool.
And he's like, hey, where can I buy this? And someone's like, hey, he tagged me, like, hey, Wes, you can 3D print this, right? And I checked it out. It looked pretty interesting. And that's a good example of something that I'm making that I couldn't make with any other process that I have here besides, like, hand sculpting it. Like, I'm holding it up here to the camera, and it's basically it's a water bottle that has a 3D printed spiral staircase on the inside. This top part will be cut off, and it'll have a cap on it where you toss the dice in the top of the tower. It looks like a giant rook for people that aren't watching. It's like a giant rook for chess. You drop the dice in the top, and they roll down the spiral staircase and come out the bottom opening, which you cut out of the water bottle. And, yeah, I don't know in any other way I would have made this. Even with the time invested in printing it, it wouldn't have been feasible. And this particular model I've had to do twice because apparently the person who designed it on Thingiverse, they're from Europe. And hey, they have different size water bottles there.
Yeah, their bottles are skinnier.
They have 1.5 liter bottles, which are pretty tough to find here, actually. And this original spiral staircase was not their proper size for any bottle I could find. So I had to scale the whole thing down like 93% and then chop a little bit off of... I had to modify it a little bit, but I got it working. If I was to run into that same problem with, let's say, sculpting stuff, like, here's this, you know, schematic of here exactly how to make this thing. Okay, I sculpt the spiral staircase. Oh, crap, I can't fit a 1.5 liter bottle because they don't exist. I'm going to have to re-sculpt the whole thing. You know how long that would take? Even compared to 3D printing, that would take a long time. And it's so, you know, it's so, I'm kind of taking it apart. Like, to model this, like, uniformly would have been such an impossible task, like having each step the right size. I mean, you can model make it, you know, like with little plastic pieces like kit bashing or something, but still, that's a lot of time and effort. And I was able to rescale it within a minute and start the print off, and I won't go do other things, take the kids to the park because I know the settings are going to work. And for the most part, they did. I did have one failure because I got too ballsy. I was able to print the first spiral staircase without any supports whatsoever, and it worked perfectly fine, surprisingly. And the second time I tried it, it had a catastrophic failure. So the I have limited supports now because I'm not willing to waste time and money on it. But yeah, I mean, I'm going to sell these for like $40 as long as I attribute the original creator on Thingiverse according to his EULA agreement or licensing agreement. That's what he said was all right. So I've actually thought about doing some modifications to this, making like a 3D model dragon, or, you know, kind of diving into this geek 3D printing geek stuff, which sounds obvious because it's geek smithing. So don't, you know, but that's like actual game related tabletop stuff. It's like a whole another avenue of people that need things, and they like unique kind of creative solutions for stuff. They don't want to go to Walmart and buy a dice tower for D&D because you can't buy it, and B, I'm sure it'll be kind of boring and generic. So it's kind of neat that I was able to kind of tap into a market I didn't really even think about. So
very cool.
3D printing, yay!
So what are you guys geeking out about this week?
I've got one.
Go for it.
It's there's a Kickstarter. Oh, yeah. If you lead with that, it's always bad. There's a Kickstarter called Micromages, which is a brand new game for the NES that this company was working on.
I saw that.
The company is called Morph Cat Games, and it's like a little 2D platformer that they actually went in and created the game so it runs on an NES hardware. So they're actually manufacturing cartridges, and they have a YouTube video to show how they like went about doing this. And it's even, I'm not a programmer, but the amount of effort and research and time they put into kind of reverse engineering how NES games were made, and then using modern techniques and software to sort of work backwards to fit a modern kind of style game onto 40 kilobytes of memory. Pretty amazing. So I would definitely recommend you guys checking that out. It's like 12 minutes, and it's pretty fascinating.
So I'm wondering how authentic it is. Do you have to blow in the cartridge for it to work?
Nope, because they also have a digital version. So if you don't have NES, you can play on your PC. You could blow in your keyboard, I guess, or in your CD-ROM drive. But another interesting thing is it's four-player co-op
for the NES. That's interesting.
So there was actually a peripheral that came out for like Bomberman where you could play four players, and that you can actually still get them pretty cheaply on eBay for now. So I backed that. It was like $60, but they blew past their Kickstarter goal. I think they ended up with, let's see, they're in Europe, 150 euros, 150,000 euros was their what they hit. The goal was 15,000, so it's a pretty good difference there. They had 4,100 backers. And the cool thing is the game's 100% finished, so there wasn't like as much of a risk with a Kickstarter. You never know like where in the process you're going to lie. And basically, it just needed you for production of the hardware. So it seemed pretty reliable, and the videos were well made. So it's a safe bet. If I get that, I'm going to be so excited. But it doesn't come out till May, so I have some time to wait. But that's what I'm looking forward to. Next, Mark.
I just had one. Where did it go? Oh, I'm actually geeking out about the newest Aquaman trailer. It looks really good.
And I have mixed emotions about it.
Black Manta looks amazing. And I don't know about the rest of it, but I don't know. I'm gonna go into this one with a little bit of hope.
I think everything looks good except the underwater stuff.
Well, I usually give the anything that's heavily CG, I give them until the movie comes out, because a lot of the times the trailers won't have the finalized graphics. You know, so I'll take that one with a grain of salt, but just the design of Black Manta, when you see him for the first time, it's like, wow, that is spot on, and it doesn't look stupid. So I'm looking forward to that one.
Josh?
I just finished rewatching New Defenders. And it's pretty awesome, because Daredevil's coming out next week. Daredevil season 3.
Mm-hmm.
And Bullseye's going to be there.
Yeah.
I'm pretty stoked. Daredevil on Netflix has rekindled. Like, I kind of liked Daredevil back in the day. Affleck's Daredevil, you know, if they had like 3 less Evanescence moments, it probably would have been a little bit better for me. But this season, like, Netflix has done Daredevil pretty awesome. And the Defenders made me want to go back and watch Jessica Jones and Luke Cage. But still not Iron Fist. I still didn't like Danny. I still didn't like you that much.
I do still have to watch all those.
No, you don't.
The second season. Pretty awesome.
No, you don't.
But no, I saw Defenders, but I gotta watch Jones season 2, Cage season 2, all of Iron Fist and Punisher.
You got a lot of work to do.
Yeah, I'm so behind. Freaking.
I've been geeking out about kind of relearning 3D modeling and animation in Blender, which before maybe 4 or 5 weeks ago I had never really used. There's been a YouTube channel I've been primarily relying on to walk through some tutorials, and they've been some really good tutorials called Blender Guru. And I probably have over 10 hours now into going through and modeling and setting up 2 different projects. And it retaught me all the basics for 3D modeling and texturing in this new program, even though I have some pre-existing knowledge from using Maya. So if anybody is thinking about taking that plunge and starting to learn Blender for whatever reason, whether it's 3D modeling, animation, or like game design, I recommend that channel, The Blender Guru. If you have some pre-existing knowledge, it'll make it that much better. But if you haven't, you'll probably have to rewatch the videos several times to kind of pick up on everything happening. But I think it's well worth it. So check that out.
Oh, I got one more thing. So Daryl from The Broken Nerd finished my helmet. I haven't seen it painted. It's modeled and it works, and he had it on his head and it looked cool. But today he put out a video where he made Judge Dredd's badge. Did you guys see that? Yeah, so he modeled, and then he cast, and then he made another one. But in that video, like, he made one for me and Bob, and Bob's is in the video. It has, like, Dread, and then there's one that says Claggett. And I guess mine wasn't in the video, but he showed me pictures of it when he made them, and it looks pretty dope. I don't know a whole lot about Judge Dredd. It was a Sylvester Stallone movie. Post.
Urban.
No, what was that movie with him and Wesley Snipes where he was in?
Demolition Man.
Yeah. I am the law.
But
Taco Bell. Cool. Fancy Taco Bell. Mm-hmm. Sweet. I'm most excited about coming out to your house.
Yeah.
We're coming out there tomorrow.
Be careful.
Yeah. So my family is traveling to visit Josh's family for a week.
Hanging out.
Dun, yeah. Dun, dun. So one half of the podcast will be united.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's a place for us to actually record the podcast. I don't have a desk. I had a desk in my RV, and I don't have a desk in my house. We should fix that. But I'm most excited when you get here on Monday. You want to go to Super Chefs on Monday?
Yes.
For lunch? Yeah. There is a superhero-themed restaurant in Louisville that specializes in breakfast and lunch food. And the guy has been it's called Super Chefs. And this guy has been on a bunch of, like, Food Network shows, and he's been on TV and whatever. And is on Instagram, and the food looks amazing. And I've always wanted to go, but they close at, like, 3 in the afternoon, so I can never get up there to go. So I'm taking Monday off. For lunch, we'll go Super Chefs.
Do you see there's also like a toy store or something up there? Or was that in Elizabethtown? Some sort of retro toy store?
Oh, that's here in town.
Okay.
Yeah, we got that. We got the comic book store. We're going to have a good time.
We're excited.
There's nature and a bunch of other crap, but I mean...
Nature? Right. There's toys and comics.
Samantha's very excited. She won't shut up about it.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Super cool.
Yeah.
All right, well, we'd love to hear from all of you. Go ahead and check out our website, makinggeeks.com. And right there on the contact page, if you have any questions for us or recommendations for the show, just go ahead and leave them there. And on the homepage of the site, you can listen to all of our past episodes and be sure to take a look at all the past guests we've had on the show, too, including last week's former, the Beerless Mammoth, newly branded Once Upon a Workshop. And make sure you listen to that episode, too. It was a good one. Workbench. Once Upon a Workbench. Yes, thank you. Right there on makinggeeks.com.
And you can find us on all the social medias on Instagram at Making Geeks Podcast and on Twitter and Facebook at Making Geeks.
I'd like to thank our patrons over at patreon.com/makinggeeks. They help keep us running. They keep us motivated with their financial contributions. They keep us on the air. They keep us being able to do other extracurricular activities like going to Maker Faire and making stickers and such. And I'd like to thank our top patron, as usual, Mr. Seth Williams, for his patronage. And all of our patrons, we thank all of you for your support. If you'd like to join the squad, join at patreon.com/makinggeeks.
If you want to get a hold of us individually, you can find us all over the internet. Wes's work is at Geeksmithing. You can find Sean at Geek Builders. You can find Mark at Asylum Designs. And you can find me at the PI Workshop. I'd like to thank everybody for hanging out with us this week. I hope you like this topic about 3D printers. If you've got more information or things that we've missed or things that we should consider, or tell us your coolest printer on any one of those social networks. Let us know what we're missing so that we can advise people when we get asked. And from all of us to all of you, we hope you have a fantastic week.
See you guys.
Later.
Take care.
Bullseye.